Here we go indeed. Hoggy is with us. We're about to catch up with one of the greats of all time. He's brought to us by Sensational Seafood Sundays at Ribera's in North Melbourne for just $99. Enjoy two-course lunch for two, including a bottle of wine. Sensational Seafood Sunday as well. Friday's Friends of Ribera's means six freshly shucked oysters and a beer for just $15 between 4 and 7. Go to Ribera's, 480 Victoria Street, North Melbourne. Just a 10-minute walk to Etihad. Give him a call, 9329-1634. Let's get to it.
I was throwing rocks at the TV when Faulkner was the sixth bowler used. For Michael Clarke to come on the fourth bowler in front of Faulkner is an absolute disgrace. What a load of junk that is. Kim tried to tell me one day, I think it was about 84, and West Indies, he tried to tell me it's a team game. And I said, no, it's not Kim, it's an individual's game.
Right, you're bloody well right.
On Halftime, right, Rodney Hall.
Right, you're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
Rodney Hogg is back on the Winter Champion Series on Halftime. A chance to go down memory lane in the world of cricket and chat to our favourite players of yesteryear. And today's veteran is one of our all-time favourites, one of the best in Australian history. 107 test matches, a high score of 200, an average of 43.66 after all that, and one of the great figures in cricket across the country. His name, of course, is David Burney. He joins us. G'day, Burney.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
It's great to have you on board. I've been looking forward to this opportunity. Hoggy's come good with a lot of great names, but David Boone, when I was growing up, David Boone was one of the big names in cricket. Do you still get a lot of love from the public?
I don't know whether it's love, is it? But certainly recognised, and I do appreciate the kind words that I do often receive.
Well, they tried to burn the Ricky Ponting grandstand down over the weekend. Apparently someone got it wrong. They're trying to burn yours down. What's it like to just have a grandstand? I know it's a funny sort of a question, but what's it like to just... You're sort of the king of Tassie, aren't you?
Well, I don't know about that. But I think they logically got it right. Ricky's the young, and so he got the new one. And I'm old, so I got the old one. I think that's quite apt.
What I love, Tasmanian cricket, just going back to you, started in about 77, 78, if my research was correct, or somewhere. No, Tassie started 77, 78, you started 78, 79. Would that be right?
That'd be deadly correct.
It's been Tasmania, really. What's that? 35, 38 years, whatever it is. Tasmania's been a real breath of fresh air for Australian cricket because, you know, you've been so well organised and so well run, and you've been a production line for international cricketers.
Yeah, I think that took a while, Hoggy, you know, a number of years before that started to happen. Of course, we had a few years of only playing five games a year and playing all over the state in three different venues.
Yeah.
But I think once... in around 87, 88, that Dennis Rogers arranged, basically, and was in charge of making Belrebe Oval the head venue and base for Tasmanian cricket. Then we started, you know, to grow and become far more confident in our ability to compete and to produce. And obviously, since then, administration's grown. It's been very successful. And we have, as you said, produced a lot of players, not only two have played for Australia, but capable of playing for Australia.
Well, it's been a growing curve the whole way, but it's always been going up. And, I mean, they've made some really good decisions. Jack Simmons was a ripping decision. I know he took you under his wing. And then Brian Davison came along and Jack Hampshire was down there and Holding and Hadley. There's been some really choice selections of people who have gone down and played. Who's been the biggest influence on you in your career?
Oh, personally, obviously, Jack, as my coach from a young kid of about 8, 9 years old through to a couple of years of my first years in first-class cricket. But all the other guys, I think, influenced... I think you're right. They were quite strong selections and picks for overseas players to come and help develop Tasmanian cricketers and just help us to strengthen our ranks a little bit. So they all had an influence in some way, shape or form.
And your career has been very interesting from a cricket playing perspective, in the fact that when you first landed, we didn't have a coach, and then the coach became paramount near the end of you. Well, as your career rolled on, the West Indies were an absolute powerhouse when you played that first Test match in '84 at Brisbane, and then you just saw the end of them, just sneaking a little. We beat them. We were a weak side, then we were a powerhouse, and there was no Warne, and then there was a Warne. So it's been an interesting career, yours, hasn't it?
It was, you know, it was quite different going in there, as you know. You were still playing then as well. Australia wasn't very successful at that time. It was just sort of the wheel was turning with, rebel tours to South Africa, retirements of the big three, etc. And, you know, it made life quite difficult. But to be a part of a group of players that turned that around over a number of years, first with the World Cup in 87, winning the Ashes back, and, you know, being the start of that period where we dominated as Australia the world cricket. Interesting journey, but a very proud one.
Can we go to that first Test match at the Gabba? You come in number six, and it's a famous Test match for many reasons, but I wouldn't mind focusing on your performance, if we don't mind, Bernie. You're coming up against Garner, Marshall, Holding and Walsh, and you would have seen them play many times and watched them on the TV. What was it like to face them for the first time?
Yeah, it was sort of a little bit daunting in respect, but, you know, once you got out there, you're just trying to play cricket. And as Rodney alluded to, Australia had been beaten in the first Test in Perth. We ended up getting beaten in that one. By the end of the summer, I think we beat them in Sydney. But the rest of the scoreline wasn't great. It was quite daunting. I think over the periods of time and the series that you played them, I think you got better at preparing for it. You got better at having, you know, your levels of confidence would grow a little bit. As a batsman, the most important time was that first 10 to 15 minutes, just to get used to that pace all the time. And I think your biggest challenge with the West Indies was the fact there was always four of them. not just one, not just two, but four. And that was no respite. You know, you think one breaks down, you think thank God for that, and then another 6'6", 90 mile an hour comes in. So it wasn't always fun.
One of the stats I love to look at is what batsmen averaged between 1976 and 1995 against the West Indies. That to me is a real stat, and yours stands out. Now, it might not look so high, but AB's average of 39 played about, I think, 30 Test matches against them, and you played 22 and you averaged 39 as well. I mean, you must be very proud of that little stat.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a lot, but I think in those days, all the things that we've mentioned, the fact that we weren't winning too many against them, you know, yeah, it's something you were, you know, very proud of, to have achieved one of those marks against the best in the world.
I said you came into a poor side because obviously you would have seen we'd been easily beaten in the West Indies. We fought hard in the West Indies, but they were too good for us. And then you saw the rooms when you came into it back in Australia. You came into a reasonably negative room, didn't you? We weren't strutting around as if we were going to beat this mob next door, were we?
Not exactly, no. And, I think I went in and got told about three times where I could sit. I ended up, no, you can't sit there, no, you can't sit there, yes, that'll do you, in the corner near the dunny. And I think AB was near me, and he just said, don't speak unless you're spoken to, or if you're going to, make sure you're 300% sure of what you're saying. So it wasn't the most positive thing, and then probably to round that off, Kim, our beloved leader of my first Test match, Kim Hughes, decided that he would resign during the game. So, you know, it was quite an introduction to the highest level.
You must have been thinking, what the hell is going on at this international cricket?
A little bit, but I suppose, you know, being younger and being I suppose what helped me was that I'd actually played a number of years of first-class cricket for Tasmania. So I think that helped in a way, and not just being thrown to the wolves really young. But there were some, also when I say that, there were some really good fellas individually in that team that were very supportive, very positive with my introduction to the team. But I think, as Rod said, the overall mental side of that particular team wasn't that strong because of the fact that we weren't playing that well.
Mm. We then went off to England and we got fairly well beaten by the Poms in that Ashes in, what, about 85?
85, yes.
Yeah, so, and that wasn't, that was under circumstances, I think you went across with, men were being question mark whether they'd signed with the Rebel Tour before they left, so it was an interesting tour, wasn't it?
That was a very interesting tour before we left, and blokes were getting taken away and queried about their integrity and their loyalty. I can remember being asked to basically vote on whether these blokes, I think there were three or four of them, whether they should be coming on the tour. And I remember Simon O'Donnell and I looking at each other and saying, I can't say what we said on live radio, but the thing, what the hell are we doing here? Mm. You know, how can we vote on whether somebody comes or not? In the end, they pledged their loyalty to the team and they all came.
Well, who instigated that? I suppose we can name their names. I mean, one would have been Wayne Phillips or Dirk Wellham, Graham Wood. I can't think who the other one was. But
I think the other one that was included but only very quickly was Murray Bennett.
But poor old Murray, yeah.
And Murray, I think they'd rung him and Murray had said no, but no one else knew that.
Who instigated, like, they'd been selected to tour in that side. Who would have instigated, was that an AB or management? Who instigated?
I would say it would have been Australian Cricket Board, as they were then, because we had no knowledge.
Bob Simpson on that tour, was he the coach then?
Nope.
No.
We didn't have a coach.
Didn't take a coach in 85.
No, we had a manager, a scorer, and a physio.
That would have been, I'm not going to talk about this at all today, but just bring it up, and that would have been an appropriate time to play up on the plane, wouldn't it, without a coach being there. Sorry, I wasn't going to bring that one up. No, you don't want to talk about that. So you got back from there, and then you ran into Richard Hadley in Brisbane. So he went through an amazing performance, but 9 for 52 and 6 for 71. So we weren't such a great side, but there was an innings in that game up there, and it wasn't yours, but it was Alan Border, 152. Now, that's one of the great innings of Test cricket.
Absolutely. You know, the pitch in Brisbane had a little bit in it. Sir Richard bowled superbly, and, you know, we were coming off the back of getting a hammering in England. So, you know, it was a little bit difficult and put us back again. But I think all those lessons learnt through England, through that New Zealand series, then going to New Zealand helped stand us in good stead for when we went to the World Cup.
Yeah.
And we formed a really good unit that were exceptionally underrated. We weren't rated at all, and we ended up winning that. And I think basically being, even though it was one-day cricket, it helped us realise that we actually belonged and we were heading in the right direction. So then, you know, we move on, win a couple of other things, and then win the Ashes back in England in 89. So that was probably the start of our real improvement towards number two in the world. And then when we finally beat the West Indies in 95, we were it and dominated for quite some time after that.
Just get back to that. Your 17th Test match was in Madras. And sorry, I left a couple of your centuries out there.
First one is very important in India.
Yeah, but that was a bloody good side on paper in the Thai Test match in Madras in what year was that? About 86. That's
86.
Yeah, that's a good side on paper. That must have been starting to form. You must have been starting to get a little bit confident of the group of blokes around there.
Absolutely, we had a good side. We had a couple of lunatics in the side, but we essentially were quite good. And you know, you just asked Jonesy about how good his 200 was. and he'll tell you, don't worry about that. But it was a magnificent innings. The thing that he forgot was there was a couple of others, obviously, that got hundreds as well and helped him on the way. But we didn't exist when he was talking about it.
Yeah, well, it's funny because you put on a partnership with him of 156 and AB put 178 with him. He gets 210. Apparently you made 122. No one ever talks about that century.
Forgot about the little fella. Started it all off.
Took the shine off the ball for him.
Oh, I did all that. Helped him up, showered him later on, despite the fact I was ill as well. Jumped him back out the door after he'd wet himself. All sorts of things went down. But I think the funniest thing about that test was Greg Matthews bowling on the last day. Bowled 40 overs in well over 40 degree heat with his sleeveless sweater and cap on. I ask you.
Well, if you saw someone in the street doing that, you'd ring up and have them locked, put away, wouldn't you?
Oh, you would. It's like one of those pommies when it gets above 25 degrees and they've still got their overcoat on and wonder why they get dehydrated.
Sounds a bit like Mo, pretty straight up and down Mo that does. Well, can I just go back to that New Zealand series? Importantly, I think you were talking about the changing of the mindset of the Australian cricket team at the time. You'd moved from number six up to number three for that series. Did you take a bit of that responsibility on your own shoulders, Bernie?
Well, I think we all did. Those that had, you know, the thing was that at one stage in 86 there, I think AB had played about 56 test matches. And then I'd played maybe a dozen, but the rest of the team hadn't played 50 between them. So, we had a long way to go. So it was basically responsibility for everyone. I was vice captain. So, that was a tour in New Zealand where he got called Captain Grumpy, which I totally disagree with and will still disagree with. But my role in that was trying to get the guys to understand AB, and they'd put him on a pedestal. They, you know, didn't know how to talk to him and all that. So we sort of, I called a little rebel group together and basically told them that he was a human being and we had to treat him and he would talk to everybody. And things started to turn around.
And you just become sort of, I mean, Test cricket's an interesting one. I don't think people really believe that they belong there straight away, or some might, but not many. It wasn't probably, I reckon, your 11th test match when you got the 123 in Adelaide against India, and then two test matches later you got 131 in Sydney. That's when you probably said, I belong in this environment.
You are an astute man, Hogg. I think not only do you know stats and dates and years,
he's very good.
You're a psychologist as well. mate, I think you're spot on in that analogy. You have to have some success in your own mind, which is essentially a milestone, like, you know, taking 5 wickets or getting 100 before you do really feel comfortable and feel that you belong there. There are a few that are different. For example, Mark Waugh against England in Adelaide made 100 in his first test match innings and very promptly told AB and I that he had no idea why we found test cricket so difficult.
Did he really say that?
He did. He came in and he said, what's so hard about this, you two old bloke? But anyway, you know, but there are a few of those, very few of those.
What I love about, there was what you went to, like Hadley stitched you blokes up the 9 from the 6, or whatever it was, about 15, 16 wickets. Then in your 24th test match, you go back to Brisbane and Sir Richard's there again and you come out with 143 run out. So that must have been a really interesting game, that one.
It was a very interesting game. We turned things around, obviously. You know, the Kiwis were quite confident up there in Brisbane. They had a great win a year or so before, so they went in with all confidence. But we played some really good cricket to them. I know Richard was entering a milestone during that test. He didn't get it. It was so many 100 wickets. So he promptly informed me that was my day and that at the next test in Wellington, I would be his record number of wickets, and he didn't get me there either, and AB became that person. So I was quite pleased with that and promptly told him. considering we'd been teammates in Tasmania as well. So that was that yarn.
You look, to sum up, well, not sum it up, but just to look at the whole lot, the West Indies, five series against the West Indies, five series, and each time we got better and better and better, or you guys got better and better and better, and eventually you won in 95. And then the Ashes, Australia lost the first two that you played in, and then you those four in a row, amazing, the turnaround, and then you're on the cusp of that great Australian, the era that we just went on and on and on. We had about 20 years, didn't we, of great cricket?
We did. And we started producing great players. And, I was fortunate enough to play a number of tests with Warnie as he was finding his way initially. And Glenn McGrath, and I never got to play with Gilchrist, but had something to do. You know, some of the guys that we produced the great players. It was wonderful to be a part of their careers early on. So, you know, it was a wonderful time. It might sound funny, but a wonderful time to play cricket, to go from the bottom to the top during your career is a legacy that I'm sure my mates and all that feel very proud of.
Do you have a favourite Ashes series victory, Dave? Is it the 89 or 93 where you made 300 on the honour board at Lord's after the century there? Do you have a favourite one?
I think 89, to finally win them back, was, you know, probably the best Ashes tour I went on over there. But 93 was a bit of a procession. And you know, the team played really well again. I think we had one change in five test matches to the side. Mm. And, we just walked all over them, which was nice.
Well, I'm sure it would have been nice.
And I think that the key to that was, again, psychological. I think, but in 89 it was when David Gower and Alan Border tossed the coin at Headingley, traditionally a bowler-friendly wicket, and AB won the toss and batted. And the English dressing room on that old balcony started laughing. They weren't laughing 550 later and getting beaten by an innings and 100. So I think that psychologically put us on top for that tour and helped us along the way a lot.
I didn't want to talk about the trip over in 89, but where I will go with that, on the plane, I think the coach made a pretty ruthless sort of a bloke, Bob Simpson. You can tell us a bit more in a second about Bob, but I think he made the statement. He was sitting up in that deck above the players, and he said to somebody, he said, "I've got a pretty good feeling this is going to be a really good tour," and then he found out what had happened on the plane. Were you sensing, did you feel, because he's pretty ruthless sort of a bloke, Bob Simpson. I think if you cross Bob, you might, rue the day. Were you feeling going into that first test match in Headingley in 89, gee, I better get some runs this game?
No, not really, because I felt that heat at the first practice match, let alone getting to the test match. he started straight up. I had a cop it on the chin for an absolutely ridiculous and stupid act. I'm not going to let in who the partners were that have got off scot-free through this whole thing. But my question to many is, that was 1989, and now it's 2015. What have you been doing with your life to still bring that up all the time?
Bob, tell us about Bob Simpson, though, the man. He came in. He's got to get credit, doesn't he?
He does. As we said before, we'd never had a coach before. Bob came in. His first initial thing was he was really strong and at times ruthless in creating the team environment that he wanted and thought would go forward. His first ambition was to make us the best fielding side in the world, and he felt very strongly that if we became that, then our batting and bowling would follow. And we worked hard at being a unit the whole time. And, everybody in the world has their faults, but I think sometimes Bob misses out a little bit on the credit side that he established and started that Australian cricket era.
Do you have reunions? Do you have based on all these Ashes wins? Do you have reunions?
Not really, mate. But we catch up every so often around the traps with depending on what guys are doing, whether they're within cricket still or whether they're outside. There's a number of us still keeping contact through modern technology and so on. So, it's, you know, but a reunion as such, not really.
There's one great test match, and you've done very well in it. It was against the West Indies in Sydney. You got 149, and your duel with Malcolm Marshall must have been just, I've forgotten about it, but you wouldn't have. Malcolm, 31 overs, 16 maidens, 5 for 29, and you've made 149. That must have been a real battle.
I think it was against him. Well, Malcolm.
Yeah, every time, yeah.
Malcolm was one of the best, if not the best, during the time that I played, of those that we played against. So, you know, it was always a duel. But, yeah, I suppose I can recall most of that. And I think the key to Malcolm was that you played 9 out of 10 balls at pace. So, you know, the memories floating back of when I was 15 and watching World Series cricket and watching him tear in and I couldn't see the thing from side on. So, you know, to be on the other end of that was another new experience of playing international cricket against the world's best.
And I think looking at the stats before we had a chat today, Dave, that was an innings that took you 425 deliveries to make that 149. So it was mental resilience as well. I imagine the mental pressure would have been just as much as the physical.
Well, mate, when there's not a lot rocking between it, it doesn't take too much mental out of it. But make a... You either went one or two ways against the West Indies, I think, when you played against them. You either took them on and you could score your runs quickly and they gave the opportunity with you, you know, and all that, but your risk-taking was greater. Or depending on the circumstances, like in those days, it was try and bat as long as you can and frustrate them to bowl at you in the way you want them to, not the way they want to bowl at you. So if you sort of work that one through, it... just depended on the day. I remember in Perth at another stage where we had to take them on or we were going to die. Because over those five series, I know my insurance broker, he was putting my death insurance up every time. so the premiums were becoming a little bit too expensive for my liking.
You've got, Malcolm Marshall, Hadley, Ambrose, Walsh, Akram, Donald. All played against you on a lot of occasions. So you're in an era, it just wasn't the West Indies. There's some other darn good bowlers around. Wacko Eunice never got you out.
No, you see, he probably hit me a few times, but no, he never got me out, which is nice. I think being short was helped that. But that heat seeker of a Yorker, I was already down there. Didn't have to go down too far. But mate, he had genuine pace and was a fan. You know, he and was in together. When you talk about these great bowlers, those two were the old ball rather than the new ball. I think you, if you were lucky to get them with a new ball, that was a lot better than the old one.
We spoke to Mike Whitney about that last week, actually, and he was saying that Imran Khan taught them how to do the reverse and get the old ball swinging just as far, if not better, than the new one. So interesting you say that. What about one-day cricket, Bernie? Did you like playing one-day cricket?
I love playing one-day cricket. You know, but the game has changed. You know, like when I was playing the majority of my career in one-day cricket, if we got 220, we were really comfortable and confident we could defend that.
Yeah.
Like now, it'll be a walk in the park in 20 overs. The game has changed as such, which is wonderful and fantastic. I enjoyed it. I would have loved to have had a pop at 2020 cricket.
Okay.
I think that'd be quite entertaining.
And would you bat in the same spot? Would you take the new chair and hit over the infield?
Oh, absolutely.
Because yeah, I was going...
I think you could bat a little differently than what your normal was.
Well, your normal was very much along the ground, or certainly not too often over the pickets. Just the two sixes in your test career, 190 innings, you hit two sixes, one in Chennai in 86 and one at the Oval in 93. Very, very concentrated there, performance there, David.
Mate, I suppose, you know, that was just a way of an opener, I suppose, in that day and circumstances about, like we've discussed before, of the team establishing itself and trying to grow. I think the one at Chennai, I might have lost a few marbles there. I can't really remember that one. but I know Devon Malcolm was the one at the Oval, and that was a ranked top edge over third man.
Perfect.
They reckon that I'm doing a book later this year on fastest bowlers, and Devon's name really gets a high rating as far as when he got it. When he got his spell together, he was amazing.
Mate, you are dead right. He was definitely one of the quickest when he got it right. No doubt about that. He just couldn't see the other end of the pitch.
You know, he reckons he bowled his best at the age of 30 because he had the glasses on, and they disturbed him when he ran in and tried to jump up and bowl. He bowled his best. I don't know whether it's the fastest, but certainly his best when he was 34, 35, when he had contacts and he didn't have glasses on.
Absolutely no doubt about that either. When he could see, he was sensational. Lovely bloke, Devon. Lovely bloke.
Beautiful man.
Makes a difference when you can see.
Oh, it does. But if I can understand what he's talking about. When you're getting in there and two-inch Coke bottles are jiggling around on the end of your nose.
Yeah.
Might get
out
a bit of focus.
Well, a lot of people played sport with glasses on, but being a fast bowler, you jump and your front foot lands big time. It's going to knock your glasses off a little bit. Look, there's a test match that interests me because of the series against the West Indies. You had some great days against them. But that last test match, 1995, when you beat them in Antigua, you beat them to win the series 2-1, and Viv in his home ground made a duck and two. What was the atmosphere and the environment like at that test match?
Well, it was great. I mean, Steve Waugh played a fantastic innings, giving us enough runs to bowl them out. It was just euphoria. And I suppose after everything just calmed down a little bit, AB was actually there with a tour group, and we invited him in because some of us that had been through the hard times as well felt actually quite sad that AB couldn't be a part of finally beating the West Indies.
Yeah.
So many years of travelling. So he came in and he just had a quiet one or two with us and reminisced the good with the bad.
Were they gracious about their loss?
They were pretty good. I think they were... some, I think, even the older guys, because of the mass exodus that they'd had in West Indies cricket in some respects... and some of their great players, you know, nearing the end, they sort of, I think they felt it was coming, but obviously it was a shock when it first happened, but give it a couple of hours and they were in having a beer with us and congratulating us and welcoming us to the next series, basically.
I've been listening intently to you every time you talk about Alan Border, David, and it seems to me that you hold him in the highest regard and certainly see him as one of the most influential players in your career or cricketers in your career. Do you think he gets the recognition he deserves from an Australian cricket point of view for what he was able to do for the game?
I would like to think so. In the right circles from those who really know, yes, I think he does, and so he should. But I don't think anybody should ever forget either. And I'm definitely one of those that he was our leader that took us from the bottom to the top. And how many times while we were learning to play the game of test cricket and establishing ourselves did he lead from the front and do it on his own? Mm. And, you know, the longer we played together, AB's he was a fantastic captain, great player, and you wouldn't find a more solid mate that would support and stand by. So, no, we became very tight, still are. And in my opinion, mate, anybody tries to blow him down in front of me, they're in for big shock.
Yeah, good to hear.
Beautifully put. And very humble, isn't he?
Very.
Your match referee, I don't think we've nearly run out of time, but your match referee at the moment, I remember in the under-16s, the umpire would come in and check your boots for nails and your hands for rings. You're the match referee. Do you go in and check some of these players' clothing and just check them for ball tampering and this sort of thing? Or are you allowed to do that?
No, I don't go into the dressing room looking for it. No, there's a different system for that. We have a fourth umpire who goes in and does a check every so often. We help them out if they've got any queries with their equipment and logos and stuff. But you know, essentially all those things you talk about, I'll end up adjudicating on. I will have an input to it. If the umpires lay a charge in any area, including those that you've mentioned, so it's quite an extensive role, but I don't go looking for it. Obviously, should I say, I'm up with the third umpire and we're watching the match, we've got replays, we've got the television, and occasionally you go, oh my God, did you see that? And yes, and so you inform on field and then they go through the process, and there's a process that you then follow.
Trouble seemed to follow Mike Proctor when he... Is he still a match referee or...
No, I don't think he is. Hasn't been for some time, but he did have a couple of very difficult circumstances confront him.
What's been your most ticklish position, situation?
Mate, I think probably the Anderson-Jadeja affair in India, in England last year, when India were playing England over there. Where there was an incident that happened off the field in the corridor on the way to the dressing room, and it went on and on and on and on and on, and that was quite difficult over a long period of time, but probably the right result in the end. And, mate, I really don't like ball tampering because it's quite confrontational, and in essence, you're calling a bloke a cheat. Mm. So, you know, I don't like that one. And the other difficult one is if you've got a security issue where the players either within their hotel or in that area of a city at the ground or in transit to or from the ground, if there was a big security issue where their safety is at threat, that's quite an important process you've got to go through and be prepared for to make decisions quickly.
Well, if I was a player, Bernie, I reckon I'd like to have the comfort of you knowing that you were in charge of that to make sure everything was going to be okay. We appreciate your time this afternoon. It's been a great chat, and thank you for spending some time with us on Halftime.
Cheers, guys, and thank you very much for not making my mental anguish with my favourite football team grow.
No, we'll leave the Blues out of this. You're going through enough pain.
Mate, don't worry. I'll stick by them. They will come good.
I have no doubt they will. Well done. David Boone with us on Halftime with Rodney Hogg. Thank you, Hoggy.
Thanks, mate.